Infendo Radio is on now.
Welcome to Infendo Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. This is episode 316. I'm your host, Lewis Pugh, and joining me tonight, we have Colin Crompton.
Hello, everybody.
Tonight, we have a very special episode for yourselves. Me and Colin this week went to a post-E3 Nintendo event in London, where we got to play many of the games Nintendo announced and were showing off at E3. And so I have a list here of the games we did actually go through on the day itself. And we're going to just talk about our impressions of what we thought about these games when we finally managed to get our hands on them. So the first thing I have on my list is Splatoon. And personally, it was the first thing I actually played on the day. And it was for you too as well, Colin?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. So Colin, what was your kind of like initial impressions on Splatoon?
Splatoon was the unexpected surprise of the event, because I'm not a big fan of third-person shooters, and I thought, I'm not going to like this, but I'll play it, for sure, because it looks right. But yeah, it was so much fun. The game runs really smooth, it's got excellent mechanics, the gamepad works well, it tracks your movement well, because that's how you aim, you move your gamepad around. And I really enjoyed it, I thought it was... For a person who doesn't like third-person shooters, it was really good fun.
I think it was interesting that they went down kind of the third-person route opposed to like the first-person.
Yeah.
Because I know there's probably an absolute ton of them out there, but I'm struggling to think of like a really big competitive third-person shooter. And they're normally kind of reserved to like the single-player experience.
Well, I was thinking of like Gears of War.
Exactly, yeah, but I mean, even so, that's... almost getting to become an older franchise now.
That is now, yeah.
But I also just absolutely love this game. And I was kind of a bit dubious at first, you know, it uses motion controls to aim and so on.
Yeah.
And I did hear, you know, you can, in the actual options of the game, if you can get into them, you can change it to purely be just the sticks. But I was actually happy with the motion controls for the vertical aiming.
Yeah, it was fine. It tracked it really well. It was really good. You do have to do exaggerated movements just to get to where you wanted. It was nice and smooth. And
yeah.
You weren't throwing it around.
No, definitely. And I'm sure in the final game you'd be able to kind of tweak those settings. But it kind of reminded me a bit how the recent Zelda games have kind of introduced motion control aiming.
Oh, like Ocarina of Time on 3DS.
Yeah.
That was really
good. Yeah, and they did a similar thing for some of the items in the Wind Waker HD remake on the Wii U.
Yeah,
and yeah, it was cool just to see them implemented in this sort of game. And yeah, I was completely kind of blown away. And obviously, we probably should kind of touch on, like, you know, the kind of the squid mechanics. So
yeah.
Obviously, that's quite different to for a competitive shooter. Not just transforming to a squid, I guess, but like actually transforming yourself in general to one thing to another.
Mm.
I guess, in a way, it's kind of a little Metroid-y.
It was, yeah.
Going from like regular Samus to Morph Ball. But it was cool. It really changed things up. And it wasn't just like a one-trick thing. There's like a whole bunch of things you can do as the squid. You can like hide in the ink. It makes you go faster for your own colour ink, as it were.
Well, to me, the ink... The squid thing was like, that's like the cover mechanic.
Yeah.
Because it keeps you safe. Plus, it allows you to traverse the environment, like go through fences and areas you can't access when you're a full person. You become sort of intangible, so you can travel through things. And it's really cool when you get to high areas that you can't normally get to. Yeah, it's an interesting new spin on it.
Yeah, no, it's cool how you can kind of like go through the grates, as it were. And like,
yeah.
By accident, I turned into a squid while kind of standing on top of one of those, like, gridded grates at the top. And if you do that, you just fall through them. I guess there's probably some tactical advantage if you can take advantage of that. But that's like to keep in mind.
it was my surprise of the show.
It was amazing.
Yeah,
and to be fair, that game did make me like come back to it quite a few times throughout the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what I also liked was, although it is a team-based game, at least the mode they were showing off, it was 4v4, there was a overall winner. And there was, I think it was a couple times, actually. I mean, it must have showed how... Because there was two rounds per like mode, or per game, as it were, and I played it a few times. Right. But there was a few times of that where I was on the losing team, but I was happened to be like the number one player of that particular round.
So that was a cool
feeling still.
Because you get points for how much ground you cover.
Yeah, just like as an individual.
How many people you take out, because you can take them out.
This is true, explode into ink.
And it's a nice little, like, so you're working as a team, but you're also trying to get that number one position. So it's like competitiveness there. So yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. Actually, I'm not sure this is something you picked up. Because, you know, certain points throughout the match, you would get a special ability, and it would be the rocket. Do you know what determined when that unlocked, as it were, so when you were able to use that?
I think it's all based on points, how many points you've gained.
So the faster you earn the points, the quicker you'll be able to get that weapon again.
Yeah,
and it just shoots
in like a massive straight line.
Yeah.
And just is, yeah, pretty cool.
So I asked you on the full game, because we've seen some like different special weapons throughout like the promotional videos for it.
That's right.
So I imagine you kind of have like some sort of customization element, where you can choose what your special will be. Because I don't think you'll be managing multiple specials throughout a particular game. But we'll have to wait and see. But that would be cool. So yeah, I mean, yeah, I really can't say enough good things about Splatoon. I mean, I was quite excited to play it before I got my hands on it. And I'm even more impressed now that I have got my hands on it. But yeah.
I was going to say, it just leaves a lasting impression, it really does.
Yeah, that's the problem is that it's going to be so long until we get to play that again.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, but now, from Splatoon, we made our ways to the Smash Bros, I guess, end of the venue. Because there was kind of a whole side dedicated towards the Splatoon, and the whole back of the venue was dedicated towards Smash Bros, both the 3DS and the Wii U versions.
That's right, yeah.
And so we made our way first to the 3DS version.
Yeah.
I can't remember what our logic was at the time. I think personally I just wanted to...
My logic was, this is the version I wanted to try out because I own a 3DS XL. And
that's true.
This would be the version I'm getting.
No, that's a good point. And for me, I was just kind of... Like, the Wii U version was kind of like a more of a known entity. Like, it's going to be like a better version of Brawl and Melee.
Well, that's the thing, because there have been console iterations of
Smash
before. There's never been a handheld one. How does it transfer to the handheld? Does it translate well?
This is the first time it's gone onto a portable, so yeah. How does the action handle on the small screen? So what did you think, first of all?
Turns out pretty good.
Yeah, no, I thought it was pretty good as well. Yeah, I heard some like negative impressions across the internet that, you know, it's just far too small, you can't see what's going on. But no, I didn't have any problems.
I didn't have any problems at all.
Yeah. I
was playing on an XL. So maybe if you play it on a 2DS or a standard 3DS, it might be a bit cramped, but I don't know.
Yeah, possibly. But I reckon Nintendo's only been demoing it on XLs.
Yeah, I think so too.
But that is a good word of caution, really. I do think it may be a bit small if you do play it on a regular 3DS. But it might just kind of be, you know, where you hold your system and so on. If it's like in a comfortable setting like your home, it might be absolutely fine. You might kind of naturally just hold the system a bit closer to you and it doesn't really matter. But yeah, the actual kind of how, I mean, the game felt as fast as it ever has been on the console. It was nice and smooth. Graphics are great.
It felt roughly the same speed like Melee did.
Yeah.
Melee was quite quick. It was a very like twitch reflex type game. Whereas Brawl, they slowed it right down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed by Brawl.
Yeah, so yeah, one of my concerns going into on the 3DS version of this was kind of the controls. Because, you know, with the console games, especially the most recent one, you've had, you know, a whole range of options for controls. However, for the 3DS version, you are stuck with those buttons sticking onto the 3DS itself.
The slide pad was my main concern. Will that be a suitable replacement alternative? to an analog stick.
Yeah, especially with you know, the emphasis of, you know, smashing the analog stick and pressing that button.
That's right.
That's kind of almost where the whole franchise is kind of being built around.
But as it turns out, it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, it works all right.
I was like, yeah, it works pretty well. So I was like, okay, well, that's cool. They've sorted that.
Yeah, I'm very happy to give the word that the circle pad's actually not bad playing Smash Bros. With. I'm not sure what it's going to be like for you in a long period of time. Maybe it'll get cramped around the shoulder buttons, probably my biggest concern after that. But
yeah,
from what I've played, it was fine.
It felt comfortable. And, yeah, cool.
Okay. So yeah, we played some of the new mode, the Smash Run. Now, the way we played it, it wasn't actually hooked up into multiplayer. We all kind of played it as an individual one-player mode.
That's right, yeah.
But the impressions I got from it, or what it felt like, it was more, it kind of reminded me of the Subspace Emissary mode from Brawl.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
However, your reward for kind of defeating the enemies were getting those stat increase items.
That's right.
And yeah, you can kind of see them build up on the bottom screen. And
what I did notice was whenever someone achieved something, because it wasn't multiplayer, we weren't doing multiplayer, it was like a single player Smash Run at the time. But when the person next to me got something, it appeared on the bottom of the screen, it says Smash Noobs. Player 3 has claimed this chest. And
oh, okay.
Whatever.
I didn't even notice it.
Yeah, it's very small. It's like a little marker at the bottom.
That's cool. That's almost like some of the Wi-Fi features that Pokemon Black and White had, where it would let you know what people around you are doing in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll see more of those, that sort of thing built into the 3DS version of Smash Bros. I've got a feeling there's a lot of secrets that we don't know about that game yet, and it's going to take advantage of, you know, the Street Pass and the other cool elements of that, you know, that portable can bring to the series.
That's it, yeah. I mean, the Smash Run mode was very cool. It was, as you say, it was very Subspace Emery, so it had the same doors. You travel through the doors, you fight little mini bosses. It was just like Subspace Emissary, but this is the condensed version.
Yeah, and it had a timer, so it felt more punchy as it was.
And especially at the last minute, you just try and grab everything you can. It's crazy. It's like, oh no. And of course, as soon as the timer ends, you get thrown into a Smash battle. Standard Smash 4-way battle. And you get whatever you claimed during Smash Run gets transferred into stats. So say you pick up so many swords, whatever, you know, your attack power goes up. And it's a different take on the Subspace Emissary. If they did that mode again, I'd be kind of disappointed.
Yeah. No, I think it was a pretty decent mode, really. But yeah, I mean, we also played some regular kind of just versus, you know, local multiplayer on the 3DS. And, yeah, I mean, that's where it surprisingly felt just kind of like the home console experience, at least to me. Although it was on a very small screen, it just felt like Smash Bros. Despite the controls you're working with, it really just kind of felt like a game I've been playing for a long time already. So if you had any kind of doubts that it wasn't going to quite click on the, you know, having it on a portable, I don't think you have anything to worry about. We'll move on now to the Wii U version of Smash Bros. So the big brother.
Yes. I was disappointed. I would say I was. It just felt like Melee had come back in HD.
I did get that impression as well.
Pretty cool. And they changed up some of the characters' movesets, like Link. Now, instead of, he's forward dash and standard attack used to be a stab. But now he does the jump attack from, like, Ocarina of Time. So they've changed up some of the movesets, which is nice. Makes it a bit more fresh. Yeah, it was Melee HD.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky to report on this one. I mean, I guess the good news coming out of this is that it did. I mean, I've got no complaints about the game. But in terms of how it was demoed, I mean, it's going to be a game that we're kind of already very familiar with. But it does feel right. And we had GameCube controllers to play with, and there was also Pro controllers to play with. And I played a few matches on both. The GameCube controller is exactly as you would expect it. It just kind of feels like, you know, playing, you know, the Cube controller on Brawl or Melee, it works absolutely fine as you'd expect. But I was also, again, pleasantly surprised. The Pro controller version works also very well. For some reason, because of all the talk about the GameCube adapter, you know, playing with GameCube controllers, I kind of thought the Pro Controller wasn't going to be that great of an experience, but it was really good. I might, you know, reserve, you know, not buying that GameCube adapter because I already have a Pro Controller. I might just pick up another one of those.
All right.
I really like the Pro Controller itself, and in terms of Smash, it's got really good analog sticks, nice and clicky when you smash them, and it's obviously, you know, regular wireless. It's kind of a good controller to kind of really get grip on, and personally, I've got two big thumbs up here for the Pro Controller playing for the Wii U version. That might cause some controversy with people going to be ordering their GameCube adapters and going, GameCube out on it, but I'm going to be happy with the Pro over here.
I saw the Pro Controller and I immediately dismissed it. Because I'm a hardcore GameCube controller. I love the GameCube controller. It's, for me, it's like the perfect controller. So I was like, yeah, I don't need that. I'll use this. I'll use it on this paper.
Definitely. Well, I can't argue about the choice. I always do like choice here.
That's the main thing. Obviously, Brawl had a myriad of control options. And it looks like...
We're going to even more this time round, because it's kept the GameCube. But it's added a couple of extras, or at least the Pro Controller. So yeah, I mean, do we have anything more to say about the Wii version? Or should we move on to the other games we've been playing? Well, actually, before we move on, should we talk about some of the new characters?
Yes. I didn't sample any new characters. I was more focused on finding out new moves with the veteran characters.
Nah, fair enough. I mean, I try to play with most of the new characters they have there, but it is really hard with this kind of demo experience when you've got like a single round to kind of try and figure out a character. To be fair, most of the new characters I played, it was tricky to play as them. And that's probably not got anything negatively to say about those characters. It's just it takes a little while to work out new characters.
Yeah.
They were fun, they all had their quirks, but it's really hard to say at this point if anyone's like a really serious top tier.
So, if you had a bigger favourite new character?
Out of the ones I played, Little Mac, probably. He felt really unique. He kind of felt a little bit like Sonic, but with decent attacks.
Yeah.
It's the best way I'd describe him. he seems to be able to like run around as fast as him, but if you actually kind of stand still, you can just kind of pummel your enemies, which is fun. But as has kind of already been said before, as soon as he gets into the air, he is very vulnerable. So you want to kind of keep your feet on the ground. But I like Little Mac, and I imagine there's going to be some serious speedy players with him just zipping around everywhere. I think he's going to be like the new Fox character.
All right. That's good. So, it's because my main one I wanted to try was Mega Man, but every time I went, like, I've got limited amount of time on this game. I'm just going to try all the old characters and see what new nuances they have.
Yeah.
So.
So yeah, let's move on to something non-Smash here, because we've got lots of the cover.
You do.
The next thing I've got here is Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker.
Oh yes.
So I assume we both got to play this one.
I played it, yeah, because I was behind you while you played it.
Oh yeah, of course.
I took over for the last
Yeah.
one.
So yeah, we played through the, I think the first three stages that they had available. And so these are probably, if you've been, you know, watching the footage from the digital event and the live treehouse coverage, you've probably seen what these stages look like. And if you played 3D World, you've probably got a good idea what they will kind of feel like and what they do play like. And you're probably quite correct. I mean, it does feel very much like those Toad stages in 3D World, but there is a lot more kind of involved in each stage. In terms of like secrets, in terms of kind of just the complexity of the stages, there's a lot more need to kind of spin that camera around to get a different perspective on the environment, and to find out how you can work your way around to a specific coin or star or whatever you're trying to collect. But yeah, I was fairly impressed with this, and it seems to kind of keep that imaginative style that 3D World's got. It doesn't really feel like it's a copy and paste job. It feels like it is its own thing, despite kind of knowing it's kind of born from that mini game inside it. But I'm getting a good vibe from it.
Well, because obviously I've never played Mario 3D World, so I went into this completely blind. I've never played the mini game in that game. And so I was like, I've got no clue what I was supposed to do. And it's just an interesting game about, you know, changing perspective. And I mean, the visual quality was amazing. The details of the dragon's breathing, black smoke came from its mouth, and all the little, you know, touches. It was great. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, the game plays really well. The thing which is going to be, I think, determine how good or not this game is going to be just how much content they do stack into the final product. But that's not really something we can kind of judge on the demo stages that they showed us. But really like that game. So another colourful game, but that pretty much describes the entire list we've got here. But we're going to move on now to Yoshi's Woolly World, which was available both one player and multiplayer on the stage. And this game looks really good in person. It looks so much better than it does on the stream, or just watching a video of it on your laptop. I was impressed in Woolly World when you kind of just run across the environments, how just kind of the land beneath you just kind of I don't even really know how to describe it. It just kind of squishes and folds and moves under your feet, and it looks really, really good in motion.
Yeah, it looks really like how wool reacts, sort of thing. It is so, like, they obviously must have done some sort of testing. Must have got a low, like, you know, testing and all this. It's all these little details that make it, like, a more, you know, exciting experience, I suppose.
Yeah. But yes, something I did come into kind of playing this game in mind with is I wanted to kind of compare how it played to, you know, Kirby's Epic Yarn. And it doesn't really play much like it. It does play more like a Yoshi game, which is good news in my book. So you do have, like, the, you know, the egg collecting and throwing mechanic, and you can even, like, swallow, I guess, your fellow co-op player, and then turn them into an egg and throw them.
Yeah. Which is an interesting idea.
It is. And it works surprisingly well as well.
It's like cannibalism in a Yoshi game. But hey, it works.
Yeah, and Yoshi's got his flutter jump. And, yeah, it just kind of, it does feel like a Yoshi game. It doesn't just feel like Epic Yarn, which is really good.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's got its own identity.
Yeah.
And I guess the other thing is you do have a health bar in this game, unlike Epic Yarn, where you could not die.
Isn't it like most Kirby games, you can't die?
I wouldn't say most. I mean, they're easy games, but Epic Yarn just took it to another level where you said, you don't even have a health bar.
I think Epic Yarn was one of the few that I played.
Yeah.
And I was like, But, this game, it's interesting. I'll grind it out.
Yeah. So, yeah, although it did have a health bar, I mean, I can't say that I took much damage throughout the stages I played, whether that's a demo issue or whether that's just going to be, like, the difficulty curve in the game itself.
Yeah, it could be like a balancing thing.
Yeah. And again, I do get the vibe this will be, like, an easy game to get from A to B.
Yeah.
And there will be, like, if you want to seek your own challenges, there will be, like, hidden items and so on you can go off and find, which hopefully will be more difficult. But yeah, really impressed with Woolly World. It's good to see that one shaping up. And with all those Kirby comparisons, I think it's only right now that we move over to Kirby's Rainbow Curse.
Yes, let's do that.
Which, of course, plays nothing like either of those games.
No, it's its own unique thing.
It is. Well, I guess only also unique to the original DS game. I guess this is technically a sequel to.
Yeah, it seems like a spiritual.
Yeah.
It's like a full-on, Kirby's Canvas Curse 2.
So yeah, in Kirby's Rainbow Curse, so this is the game where you are basically drawing a path for Kirby on the touchscreen, and Kirby essentially follows it until the end of the path, and then he, I guess, keeps on rolling, and you can tap on Kirby to give him a boost, and to kind of roll in that general direction. So I didn't actually play the original DS game, so this was a very new concept for myself, and I kind of wanted to look at the TV while playing this game, And I tried that on a few occasions, and it can't be done. I was
No.
wondering if, like, if you hold down your stylus on touchscreen, do you get like a little dot which you can see on the TV? Can you move that around? Not really. So this, it seems to be, this is like a gamepad game, and the TV is for spectators.
Yeah.
As far as I can determine from the demo they're showing us.
It certainly looked like the image that was on the gamepad, they were just blowing up on TV. Because some of the edges looked a bit rougher around the edges.
Yeah, it didn't look like it was using like the full resolution of the
Yeah.
HD TV. But the game itself is really fun. Again, I had never played the original on the DS, but it was cool to control Kirby in that way. And there was a couple of stages they had available. And I played two of the three of them. The first one being like a just kind of general woods kind of beginning-y type stage, and the second one being a underwater stage. And both of them had their own interesting quirks. And the water one was really interesting actually, because Kirby could kind of float up as well, and so you could use the lines above him and below him to move him around.
So I played the first demo bit, then I went and moved on to something else. So the physics actually change in the Doors world?
Yeah, because he's in the water as such. If you he will basically, I guess, propelled in any whichever direction he kind of finishes off in that line.
Yeah.
So you can just shoot him upwards and then kind of catch him on the rebound with a line above him.
That's pretty
Or
cool.
if there's like some bubbles floating up, he'll be get caught up in them and he'll shoot up. And then you've
Right.
got to try and, you know, catch him again by drawing a quick line. So yeah, another thing I was kind of well, I guess another thing which or I guess almost caught me off guard is this game does require like quick reflexes at times. Well, I thought this was going to be a more kind of casual affair, and it's just, you know, just kind of gently
Yeah.
plot your way through the stage. But now there are certain bits where, you know, something happens and you need to react quickly, even though you are drawing lines. And yeah, this looks like it's got very good foundations to build up a game. And I guess my comments are kind of like they are from Captain Toad. I hope there's like enough stuff in there. But in terms of just the actual how you play the game mechanics themselves, and actually I'm not sure how much we mentioned the graphics. I know we said that it kind of blows up on the TV, but the claymation style of this does look awesome.
It looks very good. It looks
Yeah,
very good.
and it looks really, really cute as well.
It's got that sort of hand-made feel to the game,
Yeah.
the way it reacts to everything. But yeah, it looks really
Yeah, I'm not sure how genuine that effect is. I'm really kind of hoping that there are some people in Japan just crafting little Kirby things out of Play-Doh and such, and all the enemies and all the stages.
and they just mod it into the game.
Yeah, and just capturing it frame by frame.
This game could take a while.
This is true. So yeah, we'll move on now to Mario Maker. So as the name suggests, Mario Maker is a game where you can make your own Mario stages. And to be completely honest, I wasn't that excited about this before I picked up the gamepads.
Neither was I.
See, I didn't think it would make a very good demo, but I'm happy to be proven wrong in this instance. Mario Maker was incredibly fun to play around with. I made a bunch of different stages, and it's fun to jump from like the stage making mode to just playing the game and vice versa. And when you jump from like the playing mode back into maker mode, you can see a clear path where you traveled, and you can like edit your stage accordingly. And I think one of the most impressive things about it, and the thing I like the most, is you could just like place as many items or enemies as you want anywhere. So you can just create a big pit and just fill it with like 50 Goombas, and then you go, "Oh, I wonder what that would look like in an actual Mario game." And like you turn to play it, and they're just like scrambling all over each other, and you just kind of jump over them all, and you find out, wait a minute, you could actually make a level out of this, because you just kind of keep building up this momentum as you're jumping from one to the other. It's all right, I'll just make this giant pit, and you can then jump over that pit into this other pit of creatures. And yeah, there's a lot of fun to be had
So, see, I avoided. I thought I didn't really avoid it. I was
there.
too busy doing other things.
Yeah.
Is there an item limit then?
Not that I could tell. I couldn't see any like meter or anything.
I don't know. Actually, some whole level boost.
Even if there was definitely enough, I guess, memory or whatever to let me create my weird enemy madhouse. that I was putting together.
So, there's also they're like a preset template, so you could choose like a basic template and build on that, or is it just always a blank canvas? You start from nothing.
I'm not entirely sure about templates, because what I was doing each time is just kind of hitting the big kind of erase all button and just starting again. I think there were some templates in there.
Right.
I'm not sure how it worked in the final release for this. I imagine you can kind of edit levels which you have saved on your system. But yeah, I was just kind of having fun just blasting everything and just starting from scratch again and playing with the different objects. Actually, and something I will add is, like, the items they give you are quite versatile. Like, you have, say, the wings, which you can attach to Goombas. But you can also, say, attach them to a piranha plant or Hammer Bros.
Okay.
You can essentially create, like, these new hybrids enemies which haven't really existed in the Mario games before, at least not to my knowledge. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm quite happy that Nintendo's really just letting you mess around and not go, oh, make a serious Mario level.
I'm intrigued to see there be a Mario game down the line where that you insert these levels. And, like, that'd be quite fun.
Yeah, it really does kind of depend on kind of what form this really, you know, takes shape once it comes out, because as you demo any game, we really don't know how big or small this thing will be. I mean, I think a lot of people are assuming it is what people are showing in its entirety, and that's all it will be. And people are saying, oh, I can't see how they're going to charge full retail price for this. But this could just be a really small segment of what this game is going to be, because that is how most game demos work. And the fact it's not being launched till tentative date of next year means it's clearly not almost finished. So it can't be the full thing that they're showing off. So, yeah, I'm hoping there will be some funky modes where you can, like, actually, you know, stitch stages together and kind of create your own Mario games and share them.
Yeah.
If they let you do things like that, then this game is just going to have this crazy this game will just last forever if it lets you you know, make your own Mario games and share them with friends.
Yeah, because, so, are the power-ups limited from certain Mario games?
Well, it's all just based around the original Super Mario Bros.
Right.
And you can switch the graphics from the regular game to the new Super Mario Bros. Style.
Right.
But the physics stay as the original game.
Right.
You know, again, they may add more things later on, but that's how it is currently.
Oh. I was thinking maybe they'll add, like, DLC that would be, like, the Super Mario World pack.
Yeah, possibly. Or it might just be part of the game itself, I know. We don't know at this point. They're obviously working on stuff. It's not a finished project yet. So yeah, we'll move on now from one kind of creative app to another. Not something I play, but something I hear you got your hands on, is Pokemon Art Academy for the 3DS.
Yeah, I'm not really a big Pokemon fan. And
are you a big art fan?
I did art GCSE.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So
my sister requested that. She goes, oh, if Pokemon Art Academy there, could you try it out? And I was like, okay, I'll try it out. And it's just basically, it kind of deconstructs every single Pokemon down to a series of shapes. And you draw these shapes, and then slowly it builds up to, the only one I did was Froakie, from X and Y.
Okay.
The Frog Pokemon. And you start with an oval, and then you draw on the eyes, but you don't realise it's the eyes yet until you draw little dots in. And then you get ranks on how well you've done. And then it seems like there's actually a bit of depth, like a little storyline to this game. So it's not just a basic, like,
DJ storyline.
It's like a little, well,
I wouldn't have guessed.
It's got a little, basically you're working for this art academy.
Okay.
And they specialise in Pokemon paintings. And you're the new protege that comes in and, oh, you're going to save us from bankruptcy. And it's just, so you start with, like, really basic, just like portrait pictures of Pokemon, just standing still, face on. Okay. And then later on it develops into, they're doing like action poses or something like that, you know. It just seems like it's made for maybe a younger audience, but who really wants to draw Pokemon. I mean, I'm happy to stick with the RPGs,
yeah. So, in terms of kind of like the tools they give you to draw and paint and so on, how like legitimate does that feel? Because I know I've heard really good things about, you know, just the regular Art Academy for 3DS.
Yeah.
So I think it uses the same kind of tool set. So, I mean, does it? Do you think you could actually, you know, improve your actual drawing skills, you know, by taking the lessons in this game? Or?
I think you could learn, like, different, like, styles of shading and technique. But, the only tool set I used was one that gives people a chalk set. And you learn how, if you merge two colours together, and you see the effect it gives you. So, yeah, there is something you could gain from this, as, like, a little tool to help you if you are an artist. So, yeah, it's a helpful little drawing app, really. It just happens to be based on Pokemon, so...
Yeah. That's cool. I think it'll probably sell more than the original Academy is, and I think it'll find a good audience.
I think so too, just with the Pokemon license attached to it. That'll help raise awareness for this. So, yeah.
That's cool. So, yeah, we'll move on now to two projects. So these are Shigeru Miyamoto's new Wii U titles, Project Guard and Project Giant Robot. And these were both next to each other in the venue, as it were. And I'm just trying to think which I played first. Actually, it was Guard I played first. So Guard is the game where it's the you're looking at the CCTV screens on your real TV, and on the gamepad you have kind of the map of the facility that you're guarding. And the basic aim of the game is that naturally robots are trying to break into your precious facility and get into the center of it, where there's something very valuable indeed. And you don't want the robots doing that, so you want to destroy all the robots. And the mission is, I think, to destroy a certain amount of robots as they come and break into your facility.
It sounds very, very much like a tower defense.
It is, kind of, really.
Yeah, I saw someone trying it out, the demo, and I was like, I'm not really sure it's for me.
I quite liked it. It's, I think it's kind of designed to be played with a crowd of people, or at least with a couple of people, even though it's only one person actually doing anything with the controls. So basically, yeah, on the TV you've got, I think it's like a dozen different screens you can look at, and you can kind of see where the robots are coming from, and all the kind of screens are numbered. And so when you see someone, or a robot as it was, come up to the screen, you can try and find the appropriate camera on your touchscreen, tap that, and then you can actually aim the camera with the gamepad's motion controls and shoot it down. But the further you get into the game, the quicker they...
The more hectic it is.
Yeah, they start cutting, you know, multiple start coming from different directions and just generally becoming a bit more faster about it. But yeah, it gets quite highly tense, that game. And yeah, I would recommend a friend keeping, you know, having an extra pair of eyes there and shouting numbers at you while you you kind of tap away on the touchscreen and then shoot them down. Because there is surprisingly a lot going on in that game. And the other thing I quite liked about it, which I didn't know until I actually played it myself, was that before you start your mission and you have kind of this map view of the facility, not only can you kind of check out the different cameras in advance, you can kind of spin them round. And so they're pointing in a specific direction to start with. And obviously that affects what you see on the TV. So if you think, oh, okay, they generally come from this sort of direction, let's point them over here, you can do that. But to go one step further than that, you can kind of drag and drop the cameras themselves to different places in the building. And so they're not fixed. And so if you wanted, you could have like the majority of your cameras kind of just on the walls outside, all just kind of trying to get a kind of widespread as possible, trying to get them before they even enter. Or you could have more inside, kind of focusing right in the middle or wherever.
So, was the enemy placement, was it randomised? Did you notice a set pattern?
It's hard to tell, really, because they all come from... There's quite a few like points of entrances. There's at least one point on each side of the building. There's possibly multiple on each side. And, yeah, because you're managing these dozen cameras, yeah, I didn't notice any sort of specific enemy patterns.
Yeah.
In the demo itself, there was, like, three difficulty modes, and I was struggling on the second, on my, obviously, first couple of tries. Yeah. I'm not sure how the game's going to expand, but there's definitely potential for it to. just like the level of strategy you could have by setting the cameras yourself, they could go quite far with this game. It's going to be tricky. I mean, it's, I'm not sure it can stretch as far as a, what we typically think as a regular retail release.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a big mini game, as it was. I think it's going to be bigger than a Nintendo Land type game. So I'm not sure where this gets placed. Maybe it's its own DLC game. But it's cool. It's really good fun. Surprisingly so. And it needs a better name. These both... Well, actually, the second one can keep its name, but this one. It needs something a bit more exciting, because it is a really cool game, this Project Guard.
Okay.
So yeah, the next one was the Project Giant Robot, which has a perfect name for this. And it has some similarities with Project Guard, because there's kind of like a phase before you're playing as well, but instead of setting cameras, you are building your custom robot.
Oh, cool.
And I thought it was just going to be like heads, body, arms, and legs that you could change. But in addition to that, you've got like, it's like upper arm, lower arm, hands, chest, upper legs, lower legs, and feet. So yeah, the robots are broken up into lots of different parts. And not only do you have like a really big selection of objects you can replace them with, and it seems that like the list of objects is the same list of objects for any body part, which makes it fun. So you can just have like the head parts for all your parts of the robot. Or like you could just have an obvious, you know, like a fist for your head.
Ooh.
But in addition to just like setting weird and wacky things, you can like stretch them out like through all the different axes, and you can just make some really weird things. And I think if I don't already, I have a picture on the site of what I was creating. But it was this kind of thing which had this drill for a head, and its body was this big giant spring. And he essentially had these really big flippers. And I dragged out his arms as well. I thought that was a good thing.
It sounds a little bit like a mechanical version of, like, Freaky Falls.
Possibly, yeah.
It's like, you know, essentially doing organic things. It's mechanical. No, that's pretty
good. Yeah, so once you've created your weird contraption, you pit it against someone else's weird contraption. And the controls in this game are delightfully bizarre. And I believe you walk forwards by holding down the R button, walk backwards by holding down the L button. You use the right analog stick to move your right arm and your left analog stick to move your left arm. And you look around by using the motion controls in the gamepad itself and use a trigger to shoot. So it is a really unwieldy game. But that's where the fun comes in, really, because naturally you are kind of moving something which looks very unwieldy in the first place. And so you're kind of really oddly stomping your way through what I can only assume is Tokyo.
It sounds like someone watched Robot Wars and went, yeah, that's a good idea, we'll make that. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like the sort of... boss scenes you would see in like Power Rangers before they had a budget. And so it was just people dressed up in various cardboard boxes and then just like whacking each other with their arms, which could not fold at that point. But yeah, it's a weirdly weird game, and I actually got quite far with I got as far as I could with my weird drill-headed spring-bodied flipper-wearing robot. And it was, again, it was really fun to do. I can't say I've had that experience of many other games. Its lasting appeal is hard to say at this point, but for playing it for 10 minutes to quarter of an hour, it is a laugh, I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
I'd like to see how far they go with this concept. Maybe they make you do, like, weird obstacle courses, as well as just trying to knock over another robot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, just doing some sort of what would be like simple acts, like maybe walking up some stairs and navigating like a platform and then a right angle turn and then another platform, and that's the entire course.
Yeah.
That could be fun to build a robot for in this setup. So yeah, I'm hoping they kind of take advantage of just the weird stuff you can make in this game. Because the other thing is the physics work surprisingly well in terms, you know, and they react as you would expect them to. And because of the weird proportion things you can create, these things are often just almost you're struggling and you're fighting for them not to fall over at any given time. So yeah, I came away, you know, just really excited about both of these games, which at first I was like, well, it's clearly something conceptual. Yeah. Hopefully it turns into something good. But no, I see what why Shigeru Miyamoto is kind of driving these projects. They are just wonderful and wacky and really fun to play, regardless of what they look like on the face of it. So yeah, I'm excited for those to come out in whatever form they do.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that they don't get turned into like add-ons or say the next Star Fox.
Yeah, that was kind of my original prediction for these. But after playing them, I think they're more in depth than that.
That's
good. So I think maybe there will be another. Either there will be releases like download games by themselves, or maybe there will be another one or another two to join them and just be a like disc release, kind of like a Game & Wario type thing, like something between Game & Wario and Nintendo Land.
Yeah.
But now these games are really good. Yeah, definitely worth a play when you can. But yeah, I mean, I know I've been using the term pleasantly surprised quite a lot already this evening. But I'm not sure what better to describe this next game, Sonic Boom for the Wii U. I wasn't very optimistic about this.
No, me neither.
But after playing it, I'm not talked about you since. I thought it was a solid game.
I think we may have differing opinions.
Well, that's good. That's good. But yeah. I didn't think it played anything like any Sonic game I had played before. Yeah. And it had... There was quite a lot of combat in it, which at first is kind of like a red alarm bell right there.
Yeah.
But I thought the combat was fine, mainly because he didn't control like Sonic. He just kind of controlled like a brawler at that point. It was nice and quick. It was fluid. It looked good. And there was lots of kind of cool puzzles. I mean, there wasn't really much fast speed action when I was playing through it.
No.
But I kind of think it had this nice pace of action and puzzle solving, and I thought the characters and the environments looked really good. But I'm very interested to hear what your experience was like with Sonic Boom.
So, visually, it looks really good. There's no denying that. It's a great looking game. But, see, to me, Sonic is synonymous with speed.
That's fair
enough. And this game kind of plods along.
Yeah.
It's not super fast. And all 3D Sonic games are a bit, have issues. And this just seems to like take issues from each game. Yeah, we're going to have these ones as well. And I didn't have that much fun with it. I was sort of hoping for more. But maybe my expectation was a little too high. It felt a lot like the Werehog stages in Sonic Unleashed. And I was just like, I hated those. And this game just seems to be the whole game Werehog stages. Not for me, so.
Yeah, I was worried about that. And to be fair, I did notice when kind of almost making a jump to a edge, Sonic's arms did stretch quite a bit to grab them. And that again, alarm bells rang. However, I thought with his new style, it looked a lot better than it has previously. Yeah. I kind of like this kind of just side to take on Sonic. I'm eager to kind of see more about this. But yeah, I mean, I'm fairly optimistic about this. The last Sonic game I played was the last one which came out for the Wii U, which was Lost Worlds. And playing the final release, that felt less polished than what I have of Sonic Boom so far of the demo.
Well, right.
Maybe that's changing my opinion, but I don't know, I did get a good vibe from Sonic Boom. It may turn out to be a stinker, but I quite liked how it is just kind of trying to be its own thing. It's not focusing on the speed, it is just kind of like puzzles and actions and more... Because I think this kind of trying to match up the speed is why a lot of the 3D Sonic games have just failed.
That's true,
Because the kind of the level design gets compromised.
But I don't see why they can't just keep Sonic 2D.
Well, that's true. But I think in terms of... Maybe it would have been better if they just took, you know, replaced Sonic with a new IP here. But in terms of, it seemed to have, like, solid, like, level design and well-paced puzzles and so on. Just on that side, it seemed like a cool original exclusive game for the Wii U. And I didn't really play it much, but there's obviously the character swapping mechanic as well. But yeah, it looked cool.
Yeah, to me, it's I'll leave it, you know.
So yeah, the next thing we've got on here is I assume it's been confirmed as a eShop title, which is Mario and Donkey Kong. So did you get a chance to play this one?
No, I missed this one. I was too busy at the time playing.
Yeah. So this was almost kind of a little hidden away in the corner. And if you've played any of the previous games in this series, you will be right at home here. But it's another one of those games which just kind of feels right at home playing it on a nice big touchscreen. And it's another one of those games where it seems like the gamepad has been kind of designed in mind to be the primary display you'll be playing this on. Because what I noticed on the TV, it had these like really big borders around the game itself.
All right.
Almost like you were playing like a Super Game Boy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why they went that approach, but no such borders existed while looking at it on the gamepad.
That's interesting. Maybe they're just trying to, like, this is a gamepad game, you know.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to, like, I think this was part of the original kind of idea around the Wii U, as well as having, like, your regular, like, full releases. You would have these, like, lounge-type games.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So it's like I know a lot of people don't really understand the concept because, they've got a portable console as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's kind of like almost a tablet-type game, but, you know, with the advantage of buttons and a powerful box running it in the corner.
Yeah.
But I think this was one of the biggest, like, demos they had available. It might have even been, like, almost the full game. Because I got a chance to just dig into, like, a bunch of the different worlds. Everything seemed to be unlocked. And so, like, I tried some puzzles from, like, the middle of the game. And things started getting very difficult very quickly. But it also just showed off a lot of the mechanics which are in place there later on down the road. And this looks like it's going to be like a really great game to kind of just play while you're watching TV. Or play with a friend with you and you can try and figure out what the best way is to kind of get your little mini Marios to the exit. Yeah, I mean, so I think this kind of fills that kind of Pushmo type role.
Yeah.
Later on when it comes down. And I assume it's also going to have the creating your own levels and sharing them. And so that's always good to see. And having that big touchscreen on the gamepad is, like we've seen with Mario Maker, is really perfect for, you know, creating those custom levels. So it's cool you can do that on the gamepad as well.
If it gives another reason to use the gamepad as a tool to make things, then that's all better for it.
Yeah. And they can kind of flex their new like stage sharing capabilities over Miiverse as well, which is good. So yeah, I've got two final games on this. Well, technically three, and these were all kind of put aside in the corner of the show. They're in dedicated space. I'm not sure which way you would call it.
I missed them coming in and thinking, oh no, Hyrule Warriors. I really want to play it. Yeah. I haven't got it, and then it's actually behind where you walk in. I'm like, oh. There's...
So yeah, they in that corner there was Bayonetta 1, Bayonetta 2, and Hyrule Warriors. So Colin, I'll let you talk about Hyrule Warriors because I think you got there first.
Yes, I was there for most of the day. this is the right main reason I turned up. Like, yes, Hyrule Warriors. I actually get my hands on it, and I've played the demo several times, and it's really cool. It is really cool. I mean, the demo contained only two playable characters, Link and Zelda. But with Link, you could choose two different weapons. So you could choose the standard sword and shield, or he could use the fire style. The sword and shield is more like standard Dynasty Warriors, just direct attacks and all that sort of stuff. Whereas the fire staff is more area attacks. But an interesting thing I noticed was, with the sword and shield, he didn't have the master sword. But I would assume he gets it. At some point in the game. But no, you fight through this across Hyrule Field, you open up this door, you go into underground, you open up a chest and the old Zelda, and you get the bombs, and you think, oh, okay. And then you actually get to explore. You know, there's like hidden caves, there's, you know, I mean, it's really cool. I mean, I thought it was just going to be a straight skin of the Dynasty Warriors game. But they actually really have put the Zelda element in there. And it's like a perfect blend, really.
Have you played any of the series before?
I played them all, yeah.
Oh, fair enough then. Because yeah. not having played them, I was quite worried that it was literally going to be just slaughtering as many, you know, like 1,000 grunts or like 5,000 grunts, and then you finish the stage or whatever it is. But it's cool that it does mix things up. I mean, you are going after, you know, specific areas or specific leaders, and it does keep pushing you forwards and giving you like different things to reach for. But yeah, I liked it. And what I did notice, because taking some pictures there on the day, I've got a picture here of the character select screen. And obviously, although Link and Zelda are the only ones you can select, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 question mark faces.
Yeah, and of course, we know a few of those.
We do. But I wonder if that's going to be the exact amount of characters, or if that's just like a representation.
See, if it is, that's a slight concern. Because obviously, in previous Dynasty Warriors games, there's like, 50 characters, 60 characters, a wide variety. But then you've got to consider, okay, so there's maybe only 7 characters. But it looks like each character can have multiple weapon types. And I'm hoping for Link, they do a Majora's Mask type. He has some masks, which would be quite cool.
That would be cool. And do you reckon they would come under, like, weapons equipped? Or there would be, like, just different slots for different character slots? How drastic can those weapons be in previous games?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I mean, we're forward to just wait and see what they put out.
The other thing I'm noticing here, and you'll probably be able to tell me how it works in the previous games in the series, or it doesn't, is on the character select screen, the character also has a level next to them.
Yeah, that's big in the Warriors series. It's basically like an action RPG. So, this game will be the closest you'll get to playing a full-on Zelda RPG, you know?
Yeah,
because I leveled up a couple of times in the battle, and I learned some new moves, and, you know, like down-stab attack. It exceeded my expectations, because I was just like, it's just going to be Dynasty Warriors with Linkin. But no, they really have pulled out all the stops on it.
Yeah.
One thing I will say is the voice acting. Now, it is traditional Zelda voice acting. It's just, hey, or, oh no, or whatever. But Link sounds so angry. I mean, I don't know if something happened in his childhood, but he is the angriest person. I was like, wow, okay. He's really ticked at something here.
He must be ticked, you know. It's quite kind of a steep turn of events in like how many enemies he is destroying in this game, to how many he does in like the entire duration of his previous games.
Yeah, see, this game does follow on like the more newer Warriors games, where it's actually, see, in the old Warriors games it was like a big thing to hit 1,000 kills, and it's amazing. But in this, it's really easy to get 1,000 kills.
Yeah,
but they call it KOs. You've got a sword, KOs.
So yeah, I only got to play this the once, and I chose to play as Zelda, purely because most of the footage I've seen of the game had been of Link, so I thought, at least get my hands on it, it should both look and play quite a bit different to what I'm used to.
Yeah.
And Zelda felt pretty legitimate. I quite liked it. I was a bit nervous maybe she would seem like a weakened character, which would be a bit stupid really, but no, she is very powerful. And doesn't seem overpowered, you know, just kind of really fits in place in what, you know, the sort of style the game's going for. And, yeah, I mean, she's not been overly sexualized or anything like that. She just looks like a you know, a cool, badass character, which is awesome.
Is. I mean, when I was being Zelda, I thought, this is, she's pretty cool. She's really fast. She's, her rapier's really cool. She has rapiers and things like that.
Yeah.
But when you activate her ultimate attack, she summons the three goddesses, like Din, Nehru, and Farul. Yeah. And that's like her ultimate. That was visually, I was like, wow, that's impressive, you know.
So yeah, now I'm looking forward to all the different special attacks in this game.
Yeah, especially if they learn new ones, because that's a big thing of newer Warriors games. You learn new special attacks.
Oh, okay.
That's how they, you know, if they have it. One thing that's weird about this game is Princess Zelda is actually the Queen of Hyrule.
Yeah, I did hear that.
And I'm like, Okay. So, but they still call her Princess Zelda.
Oh, that is weird then.
Yeah, like, she's Queen, you know, but no, they said, oh, Princess. And I'm like, okay. Unless it's like a plot point.
That's a good point, yeah. Maybe she goes from being Princess to Queen in the duration of the game.
But it's an interesting little take on it, so. Yeah. Really excited about that.
Yeah, we didn't get to play it there, but it does also have the local co-op mode where one person has a TV, one person has the gamepad. Yeah, I think that will suit the game very well as well.
Well, that'd be useful because in the old Warriors games, it does two players. It causes a slowdown.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
It's having to process two screens at once.
Yeah.
Whereas the Wii U will not have that problem. So.
Well, hopefully. I mean, it's technically doing the same job. So, yeah, hopefully it is done in a way where it's nice and smooth on both screens still. But yeah, I mean, it was quite a big theme throughout their current lineup is multiplayer.
Yeah.
Or co-op play, at least. I mean, most of these games have some form of multiplayer in them, even if it's like a Project Guard type, spectator type multiplayer. There seems to be a lot of not just having a single one-player experience here. Probably purely gone the exception of the next game I'm about to bring in, the next two games, which is Bayonetta 1 and Bayonetta 2, which I was almost quite surprised that they had a whole like booth, as it was, set up for the original Bayonetta.
Yeah, I was surprised at that. It was like, oh, play the first one.
But then I realised that the weird Bayonetta costumes they're only in the original game. Yeah, at least from what we've heard so far.
Yeah, well...
Which is probably a good thing, because, you know, Bayonetta 2 is the new game. It would be weird to have your first playthrough of that game be of Bayonetta in a Peach outfit. Going through all the, like, very, like, dramatic cutscenes and so on.
Yeah, because you're about to take it seriously. Cause it's like, I was kind of surprised by the Peach outfit, because it's... I know Bayonetta is a highly sexualized character, right? You know, she's there. She's
However, Peach rash, is not.
Peach is not, but the Peach outfit is the most revealing outfit that she has. I'm like,
yeah, it does look wrong.
But the coolest thing about the Peach outfit is you can summon Bowser. That's her unique ability with that outfit. I was like, that's really cool. The fact that it actually makes a difference. And when you kill enemies, they drop the old Mario coins. There's lots of nods to whatever outfit you're wearing.
Yeah, but beyond the weird, like, Nintendo gimmicks that they've managed to get into the game somehow, I was very impressed with just the solid frame rate. This was running at nice, smooth 60 frames a second. When I was playing this on the PS3 a few years back, it was not.
Well, see, I played on PS3, but then you read the backstory, the fact that it's a 360 game first, and then they've tried to port it to PS3, but PS3's got like this weird architecture. So they couldn't get it running fully on PS3. But the rep that was there, the helper, was there, said to me that this is based, they used the 360 version of the game as a base. So the better version as a base. And then they actually optimised the game engine for the Wii U. So there's more particle effects, there's more just little bits here and there that makes it, so the overall game's a lot more smoother, it's a bit more flashy, it's got more small in it, basically. More, you know, like, there's more reflections. So you walk past a mirror and you actually see the reflection, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's nice that they are taking the effort to make this game optimised, not just have the game.
Yeah, I mean, and the fact that it is being given away free with the purchase of the second game.
Yeah. So they go through a lot of effort for what's essentially
exactly, yeah. And it's, yeah, this is going to be the best version of Bayonetta 1.
It is.
It's going to be the best looking, the smoothest and the highest resolution combined, as it were, and with the odd Nintendo extras as well. But Bayonetta 2 is where it's at, really. And that demo, oh man, that was just crazy. That was out of this world type stuff. And has it become even more sexualized than the first game?
I think it has. But, I mean, yeah. Which is amazing, because it's like a Nintendo thing, but yeah. Okay, so Bayonetta 2, yeah. It's basically taken Bayonetta 1 and was like, yeah, we're just going to push it up 4 or 5 levels. Because, okay, in the first one, when you defeat a boss, she summons a giant creature. It's like a Q2E sequence. You can't really control it. In 2, you can now control it in real time. And unlike the Wii U, you can now process this information. So you've got, you're controlling Bayonetta, and this creature, and it's crazy.
Yeah, and if this was like the first stage that you picked for the demo, this would also be both on a like a jet flying through a city.
Yeah.
and like doing like barrels and whatever, and the
yeah.
There's so much stuff going on.
It's almost too much to take in. Your eyes are like, what's going on? I mean, obviously you get adjusted to it. And of course it's lightning fast, this game. There's no letting up, there's no slowdown. There's things whizzing past the screen. There's so much information on screen.
Yeah, it's just so impressive it managed to keep a constant 60 frames, which you could tell it was just silky smooth throughout. Yeah. But there was just so much going on. I don't know how they've managed to get this perfect balance out of the Wii U.
Yeah, so they're going... The stage starts in the jet, and then I'm trying to wrap up.
Obviously, the jet crashes into the building, and you jump off, and I think a big dragon appears from somewhere. And
that's right, yeah. And it's just mind blowing. It's like, what's going on?
I'm even more excited about 2 than I was before, and the fact that Bayonetta 1 plays really well as well means, man, we're gonna get a awesome package out of this.
So that's cool. It's really cool.
And that pretty much concludes of all the games we played at the post E3 event. Before I wrap this one all up, is there anything you feel we've missed or anything you want to say about the event itself in general?
There is something we missed. And that's Monster Hunter 4 U. That was there, and this is like, they're like, oh, this is the first time it's playable in the UK. Like, okay, cool. Now, this is where I had a little bit of a grievance to start, because there are two extremes. They're either really helpful, and like, yeah, okay, you do this and do that, it's nice. Or they're like, here's the game, off you go. And so, the guy who was there said to me, have you played Monster Hunter before? I said, well, yeah, I've played them all, basically. And he goes, oh, do you get as far as G rank? Yeah, I've done G rank. Goes, oh, so you're really good at it. And I said, well, I haven't played this one, so... I don't know. And he's like, okay, well, here's the last boss. Well, the main creature that appears in all the trailers. What's that for? Well, I think that's
it sounds like a good place to start.
Here's that. Here's this. It's the hardest difficulty saying, off you go. Try it in the new weapons. I'm like, thank you. And he just stood there and watched me get decimated by this thing. He went to me, oh, Capcom was still balancing it. I kind of guessed that because this creature looked at me and it just killed me in one hit. And I was like, well...
I think that's just a polite thing to say at that point, to be fair. When he's demoing you a game and the creature he's just showing you has splattered you into the ground. I think they're still tweaking things.
He's like, oh, yeah. They're still trying to make it work. Oh, thank you. So, really cool, really good looking, really smooth. Massive environments in this. Huge. And of course the characters now, the maneuverability's been dramatically improved. The environments are completely destructible, because I fought this creature in like its nest, on the top of its mountain, and I managed to show that thing where you jump on its back and you got to do this QTE sort of thing, and it's trying to fly in the air and you stab it and it falls to the ground. The platform it landed broke. We both fell down this mountain. I was like, this is crazy, you know, and the 3DS is fine, you know, it's just taking it in and there's no slowdown. It's amazing, you know. So, yeah, Monster Hunter 4 U left a really good impression. I'll be able to pick that up when it comes out early. I tried getting, I asked him, would there be like an eShop demo? Because this seemed like an eShop demo, the way it was set up and everything. Because I said, well, ultimately, yeah, Monster Hunter 3 U had an eShop demo. And he went to me, I can't tell you anything. I was like, okay.
Wink, wink, nosh, nosh.
So there you go. That's my experience.
Yeah, I also had a go and was also equally impressed. Like the new weapons they had there.
Yes.
I can't think of the names, but what was the pole vaulting new one called?
It's called the Insect Glaive.
That's the one.
Which is, it's obviously before it was translated Insect Rod. And I was like, I'll still call it the insect rod. He's like, no.
I'm going to call it the insect rod. So I used my insect rod to, So you said, you can use it to...
You can use it to pole vault in the air. If you time it right, you land on the back of the creature, you cling onto it. You can throw the beetle out and it latches onto a creature and basically takes its properties and gives it to you. Oh, that's cool. I did get a chance to try out. Did you try out the charge?
No, but the rep there did show off the charge axe for me, just himself. And yeah, I mean, it's cool. I mean, obviously it switches between the two. And when you do, you get he was showing off this, like, get moment of invulnerability. And so you can use that to your advantage. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there's lots of cool things you can do with that. But yeah, that's what I like about Monster Hunter. All the different weapons kind of almost feel like their own characters.
They do, yeah. So it's always good if you get bored of one weapon type. You know, just try something else out. The game completely changes depending on which weapon type you use. And...
yeah. So yeah, before we wrap this one up, so what are your kind of just overall, like, feelings and impressions about just the show itself? How did you leave it?
I thought the show itself, I was quite impressed with the setup, the actual venue when you walked in. And just to describe it, I mean, you walk down these stairs and you find these, like, splodges of paint everywhere. I was like, what's this about? And of course you walk downstairs and there's, like, massive splodges of paint. And of course you realise it's Splatoon. Yeah. And, yeah, it's a nice big open space. There was free drinks there, not alcoholic, but, you know, it's like water and juice. Yeah, it's a nice little, I thought it was quite good, I really enjoyed it. Some of the reps were really good, some were a bit heavy-handed, yeah. Some were not handy at all, they just sort of stood there. It's, you know, they didn't really know what they were talking about.
I think the majority were pretty good, really, in terms of knowing what they're actually demoing. Yeah, most of the people I spoke to actually kind of knew what these games were about and kind of knew the answers to most of the questions I had, which is pretty cool. I wasn't necessarily expecting that.
I mean, there was the only trouble I had when I first played Bayonetta 1, I went there. As soon as I saw it, I'm going straight for that. The reps there, either their mind went blank or I didn't know what an analog stick was because they told me to rotate the rotator.
The rotary.
And I'm like, the rotator? Like, okay, I'm guessing the arrows. Alright. Interesting choice of words. But I will say, I must congratulate you on winning your...
Oh, of course.
The Smash Tour.
Well, yeah, I mean, it wasn't quite as tourney as I was initially expecting. But yeah, the way they had it was they were essentially calling up groups of four people, to go out in a Smash Bros. Fight. And the winner would get a limited edition t-shirt. And it was like a one chance thing. Once you've kind of played your match, that was it. And I guess everyone was had the chance to be part of a match. But that's just kind of how it worked. You just had the one, and then the best person out of those four would get a shirt. So there wasn't really like a tournament type structure. But yeah, I mean, out of the group, we were both involved in, I'm going to say very luckily... won it.
I was so close.
Me and you had a few games of Smash throughout the evening, or throughout the morning, I should say, and that was the only one where I won. Was the one where, like, it was actually had a prize to it.
There's a prize.
Yeah.
At the end of it. Yeah.
I literally only played to win.
But congratulations.
Yeah, indeed, it was quite suiting, really, because I was choosing to play as Mario because my main Peach wasn't available, and I came out with Mario's shirt. So can't get much better than that. So yeah, I think that's a kind of a perfect time to close off the show. And as always, you can send in your questions, whether they just be regular questions or questions about our post E3 experience, to contact@infendo.com. Or if you're listening on the browser, you can scroll down and enter your comments in the comments section below. This has been Infendo Radio. Thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. We'll be right back. have been listening. Oh man, I forgot to end this now.
Yeah.
Silence.